You are listening to Eastside Radio Podcast.
And you probably know that Australia has a huge pool of artistic talent. John Waters, for example, is an English-born Australian film, theatre and television actor, a singer, a guitarist, a songwriter and a musician, and a lot of other things as well. He moved from Australia to from England to Australia when he was 20, and he still lives here, so he probably qualifies as an Aussie. In a moment you'll be listening to John and his band singing a song called My Generation. In fact, why don't I put that on so that you can hear it while I'm talking? This is John Waters and My Generation. Well, you know, that is anyway. miss the intro. Okay, look, we can't possibly have that, especially with John sitting across from me, so we're going to do it again. Here you go. Right, now you're listening to John and his group called Stew and the Chartbusters right now in the background. It was originally by The Who, but it was made better, of course, by John. The more senior members of our community will remember John from Play School, where he was prominent for some 18 years. And if you don't remember him from Play School, you'll probably remember him in the ABC drama Rush. And if Rush wasn't your thing, he won a Best New Talent Logie for his appearance in Division 4. Over the course of the years, he's appeared in All Saints, and, so many other things. Offspring, Rake, Mystery Road, just to name a few of his TV appearances. And when he wasn't involved in television, he had numerous stage appearances, notably in The Sound of Music, of all things. The Rocky Horror Show was even more appropriate for him, I would have guessed. And also in the two-man John Lennon tribute show called Lennon Through a Glass Onion, which performed across not only the whole of Australia, but in London and New York as well. Now, an exciting new show from John Waters has just started, and it'll be in Sydney in February. It's called Radio Luxembourg, and has its genesis all the way back in the 60s, when commercial radio licences were not available in the UK. But rather than me telling you the story about it, let's talk to John Waters. Why? Because he's in the studio right now opposite me. Good afternoon, John Waters. Welcome to Monday
G'day.
Drive.
Good day, Alan. It's nice to be here.
Do you recognise that song?
Well, of course. My generation is what it's all about. But as I say to the audience, it's like, it's my generation, it's your children's generation and your grandchildren's generation, because the songs that became big that from the British sort of, pop revolution as it's known, have informed all the rest of the music since, and everybody loves it. You know, like every generation likes their own. If you first listen to music as a teenager in the 80s, then you know you love the new Romantics bands. You know, but if you had your teens and early adulthood in the 60s, you were there at the start of the whole revolution. We were only able to listen to the American music that it was based on from the late 50s onwards because of Radio Luxembourg, which came across the medium wave.
Well, we'll get to that in a minute if you don't lie, but yeah. I just want to soak in a little bit more of this because everybody just loves it.
Yeah.
Do you remember being in the recording studios doing that?
Well, that was recorded live. Yeah.
Yes, it was live.
We were at the Randwick Ritz, actually.
The Randwick Ritz.
Yeah. We did our first performances of this show a year ago, and it was a kind of like a toe in the water, and we got some great reactions, and also we got a great live recording out of it, which is available to the punters who come and see the show now.
Yes, and we'll get to that in a little moment, and I'm going to be really thrilled to play a couple of tracks from it. But before we get to Radio Luxembourg, I'm intrigued by Lennon Through the Glass Onion. Tell us how that came about and what was that experience like?
Well, it took up a large chunk of my life from time to time. But I started because I'd started in music, and most of my friends were from the musician side of things rather than the acting. I did have a lot of good friends in the acting profession, and still do. But I wanted to do something that to put together the music that I love and the what I'd learned about being an actor, particularly on stage and controlling an audience and speaking to them. And I just had an idea of the thoughts of John Lennon, excerpts and bits of songs of his that were pertinent to his life story, and put it together with Stuart Darrietta making a music track and playing the piano, and I played acoustic guitar, and we started at the Tilbury Hotel in Sydney, thinking, well, here's a good thing to occupy 3 weeks of our time.
All right.
And it
3 weeks extended to...
Before long, we had people hanging from the rafters, literally, and it was great to see the reaction that it got, and we thought, well, we're onto something here, we better keep going.
Do you have a particular favourite track from that album?
I do. I love the song How, which is it's actually off the Imagine album, and it's one of the lesser known of John Lennon's compositions, I suppose, but that's the one I love, one I relate to, yeah, most from my childhood.
How can I go forward when
early adulthood, really.
it's very somber for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a really reflective song about, you know, we're born into this world without a handbook. We don't know what to do.
Right.
We have to figure it out for ourselves. I think it's the lost John Lennon, yeah.
Did he do this song? I don't ever remember him doing it.
On the Imagine album.
Right.
It's a track, you know.
There you go. Well, it's a track on your album anyway.
Yes. So
More than I've listened to John Lennon, to be honest.
Yeah, I picked it from the body of his work because I liked it so much. And in the context of the show, it was quite informative to people.
How can I have feelings when I don't know it's a feeling?
It's a very faithful reproduction, isn't it?
It's pretty much. I mean, When we're doing songs by other people, first of all, you know, with Lynn, and now with these Radio Luxembourg songs, we like to make them recognisable to the listeners who like the original song. But once you've done a song a few times, you rehearse it and you start to perform it, you do it in your own way, you know, based on the way it was originally done. And, you know, he said, sometimes people say, oh, yeah, that sounds better than the original. Well, we never would claim to be better than the original people who wrote these songs. But the thing is, we're approaching them with the benefit of greater technology than they had.
Right.
So the sounds are better.
Did John do it with a piano accompaniment?
Yes, yeah. Because this is sort of late career, you know, it's like...
What was the most memorable part of the entire Lennon experience for you? Was it in Australia? Was it in New York? Was it in London?
Well, it was the start at the Tilbury Hotel, as I said. Mm. But it came in New York when I just love the city of New York. It's such a great place. And I was there at the Union Square Theatre with my own show in New York City, and I felt really chuffed about that.
Yeah,
was getting New Yorkers who, of course, knew and loved John Lennon very well.
Mm.
You know, thanking me for sort of bringing the memory of him back to them. So, yeah, the New York season was great.
How long was the New York season?
We were there for 3-4 months, something like that. We just got into the depths of winter when just about every theatre closes down. You know, New York winter is pretty savage.
It's bitter.
Yeah, it's bitter over there. Our business was not breaking any records because we were one of 500 shows in New York City. But we got nominated for an award, for a small music theatre award, and by the New York Times Writers Desk. And then it was critically very successful.
Give me one more song from that album before we leave it and get on to something else.
Well, a song that was from my childhood, my teen years, was one I sang to myself when I was riding my bicycle to school in the rain, and it took me to another place altogether, Strawberry Fields Forever. It's one of those songs that really changed my concept of how a song should sound.
The magic of radio.
Strawberry Fields. nothing is real. Nothing to get hung about. Strawberry fields forever. Living is easy with eyes closed.
One of the classics of all time, really, isn't it?
It is. It's written in a way that was that differed from the structure of other pop and rock songs, and it really did, it did what music should do, take you to another place.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Stewie a little bit later on, but he must be an extraordinarily accomplished musician.
He is. He's a great guy to hang around with as well, you know. So Stewie's personality infects his music and vice versa, I suppose. So he and I have been friends for 40 years or so now, and we started. We met up just through music circles. We wrote songs together, and then we came up with the idea of the John Lennon show. And we've done a lot of other concerts and various variations on a theme. And finally, this one, which was my idea to do all the songs that I listened to on Radio Luxembourg and saw live at a venue near me where I lived in southwest London called Eel Pie Island, I was very lucky to be able to see some of these acts live.
All right, well, we might leave Strawberry Fields. We could go through every single one of these songs, but I think that would be something...
Might take us a while, my parking spot won't last that long.
And I'm sorry, Eastside Radio won't reimburse the cost of the fine either.
Right, okay, I thought that.
They don't reimburse mine.
No.
The time is 22 minutes past four, and I'm delighted to have John Waters in the studio with me to discuss a number of things, not least of which is the... Radio Luxembourg show. But before we get to that, my regular listeners will know that I always have a quiz on Monday Drive. Now, the quiz is a little bit later on in the show. However, I do have a specific quiz for you.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to play something, and there are two questions. The first question is, who is this?
Warren Carr playing
and here's the first picture. Harry was
me
a
reading
white
the,
dog with black spots who liked everything.
Harry the dirty dog.
Harry the dog?
Yeah.
The black dog with white spots. He liked everything except what is the second question?
Oh, bathing, washing. Yeah.
Let's see if you're right. We'll take that from the beginning again.
And here's the first picture. Harry was a white dog with black spots who liked everything except having a bath.
You're right.
There's the bath.
There you go.
There.
Right.
So one day, when he heard the water running in the tub, he took the scrubbing brush, there it is in his mouth, and buried it in the back garden. Dig, dig, dig. Digging a great big hole. And then... he ran away from home. What a naughty dog Harry is. Fancy running away from home.
Well, you ran away from home, didn't you?
Yes, I did, a number of times, actually.
Well, I'm thinking more towards about the age of 20.
Yes, and I ran away to Australia. Yeah.
And you got straight into play school at that stage?
No, I got into doing music with a... various garage bands around the place. I then attended the auditions for Hair, and I was an original cast member of the rock musical Hair.
Did you take your clothes off?
We all did in a sort of tableau sequence at the end of the first act. Sort of backlit tableaus. Like the thinking of we were prancing around naked on stage is just kind of ridiculous mythology. But it was a very picturesque tableau.
Yes, talk about play school, because that's where a lot of people...
Play school came along as a sort of sideline for me when I was on stage doing Godspell, the musical, and my agent said the ABC want a new presenter for their show, Play School, perhaps something you could do, you know. So I went along and auditioned, and they asked me to do the show, which I did intermittently. It's a better thing to do in between other jobs than driving a cab or making coffee. I was lucky in that regard.
But I mean, most people who know the name John Waters of my age, our age,
yes,
know you from that.
Yeah, well, a lot of people. It's kind of reassuring to me actually to know that there are people who are in their 50s who spent their early childhood watching play school.
I wish I was in my 50s, John.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move along to Radio Luxembourg. In history, tell us a story about London radio in the 60s and how you became aware of it.
It was a kind of on the grapevine, you know, the youth grapevine. Have you ever listened to Radio Luxembourg? No. Well, you better, because they play all the pop and rock music that we don't hear on the BBC. So it's 208 metres on the medium wave, which is an old sort of kind of AM thing, and broadcast from continental Europe. So it came from a fair way away, and the reception would fade in and out a little bit, and you'd sometimes have to lean out the window with your transistor radio. But it was utilized by the British record industry so that they could sell their product, because this was a huge new youth industry and market. Mm. And the BBC, of course, in their typical stage style, were kind of ignoring it. They'd had a bit of it on television and would play an occasional pop song, only if it was nice and harmless.
And it was referred to as the British pop invasion.
Yes, because it was taking American music and sort of putting a new slant on it and selling it back to the Americans. Mm. And the bands, of course, famously commencing with the Beatles in 64, and from then on lots of English bands, or groups as we called them in those days. We didn't call them bands, we called them groups.
They were groups, that's
yeah.
Right.
No, they went over to the States, and the Americans loved our way of doing their music. Mm. And then they had their own groups, and they sort of put their own new slant on it and sent it back to us. So it was a kind of musical dialogue across the Atlantic, which was great.
And Radio Luxembourg itself started in 1923.
Yes.
That was one of the early pioneers of radio.
Yeah, and they decided that they'd have this English language broadcast slot. They were known for the variety of different things that they had on, but in particular music. It was mostly, you know, big band music in the early days. And they played a lot of Europeans love their jazz, of course, you know. So in the early 50s, it was a bit of jazz and swing. But then when the rock and roll started, they latched onto the fact that there was no commercial radio in the UK, and they started playing it.
And you latched onto that in the 60s.
Absolutely,
In the 60s. How did that impact your perspective on music as a whole?
Well, I got to learn about genres of music that I didn't know that much about by, first of all, in the late 50s, which is when I started listening. They played, there was a country music hour,
right?
And they played songs by Jimmy Rogers and Jim Reeves and all the old country stars, and I kind of liked that, because I'd always liked cowboys when I was a kid. But then we had the pop of American sort of late 50s, early 60s, the pre-Beatles music, as I would call it, which was also really great. I mean, I liked Dion and the Belmonts. They had a great groovy sound. I loved their song Ruby. You know, Ruby.
Yeah.
They had a groove that was taken up by the British bands, and the British bands then thought, well, we've got some very loud new amplifiers invented by Jim Marshall, and we will, we'll make the songs topical, we'll write them ourselves, and that was a new thing that the radio revealed to us through their interviews with the musicians that they were writing the songs themselves.
There was Radio Luxembourg. There was also. Why did you stick with Radio Luxembourg? Why didn't you listen to...
The boats came later, yes.
No. The point that I was making is that there were a lot of major cities closer to London than Luxembourg. There was Radio Amsterdam.
Yes.
Yep. Radio Paris.
We did. Radio Amsterdam played a lot of American rock music.
Yep. Paris is closest of all of those three.
Yes. I'm not sure that anybody ever said, why don't you tune into this? Because I never did.
You never did. Like, well, it's as simple as
Luxembourg
that.
It was a kind of a cultural thing, and our DJs made their shows and either went over to Luxembourg to broadcast from there or sent the tapes over.
Right. Part of your, a significant part of your past also included movies. We're going to come back to Radio Luxembourg in a minute. But movies were a significant part of your past. I've got another small quiz for you.
Okay, here we go.
What does this music mean to you? And identify it as soon as you can. ¶¶
Get him, family.
You're absolutely correct, of course. What's your favourite memory, or do you have any memories of your time in that movie?
Well, I performed the stage play in recent times. There was Adam's Family, the musical, in 2013, I think it was.
What part did you play?
I played Gomez Adams.
Oh, Gomez.
Yeah.
Gomez. How's your French accent?
No, Spanish.
Oh, Spanish accent.
Yeah, well, Hispanic. Yeah, kind of. I like doing that. I like, you know, because the original Gomez in the cartoons was quite accurately portrayed in the recent series Wednesday on TV.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw that. But, you know, I sort of like just had my own version. And I was playing with Chloe Dallimore as Morticia, the beautiful, tall music theatre star, and it was great. It was good fun. It was a really, really great show, which didn't last and didn't do the sort of business it should have.
Mm-hmm. So do you have any particular memories of the stage? Not the stage, the early time in the film.
Oh, well, it was a TV series, really, that first took us by surprise. It was absolutely brilliant. You know, I loved it. It was just very tongue-in-cheek. It was written with a great New York Jewish sense of humour.
Yeah.
And it was a very hip show, for surprisingly so. You can go back and watch it today and say, that's a hip show.
What was the first film you actually did do?
First film I ever made and acted in was End Play with Tim Burstall, Australian director, in 1974, I think.
Fun or traumatic?
No, it was great. It was great. It was a good era when Australia was making its own feature films, and I'd just done the Rush TV series.
Right.
And Tim Burstall, I'd come to his attention. He was our most famous director of the day, actually.
Right.
And so he went to my agent and said, I'd like to ask John if he's interested in doing this sort of thriller movie that I've got called End Play, based on a Russell Braddon novel. And so I did.
And what was your criterion for saying yes?
I just loved the idea of doing a feature film with Tim Burstall.
Yeah, Tim.
And George Mallaby played my brother. So the two of us had met during filming episodes of Homicide that George was a regular in.
Right, he was indeed.
Yeah.
Is he still alive?
No. Sadly, he had an illness some 15, 20 years ago.
Right.
But yeah, I met lots and lots of people in the industry through when I started to do a lot of screen work.
Right, you have done a lot of screen work, and you've played a lot of iconic roles. So the question becomes: how do you inhabit a role? How do you develop into Gomez Adams? How do you develop into a character?
I wish I could tell you in enough detail to satisfy you with an answer to that question. All I can say is that you have to try and put your own thoughts away and put your own persona aside somehow. It's a mental process, and it's also helped by a little bit of a research process. In my case, just reading. I read as much as I can that is, if I'm playing an actual existing character, be it a fictional character like Gomez or a real person, and then I kind of look at the different versions, and then I start to think, well, how would I do it? And I might, you know, I played Professor Higgins. I borrowed a little bit from the movie that we all know with Rex Harrison.
Rex Harrison,
and
that's
I also I watched Leslie Howard in the movie of Pygmalion, which is the exact same story.
Based on it, yeah.
And I thought there are aspects of both of those versions that I like. So I just let it. It happened. I let it happen inside my head. I marinate it for a while. I don't make any big decisions, and I see what comes to the surface. That's the best way I can explain it.
Okay. Well, thanks for the explanation, but I think it's time for some music. What would you like to hear yourself sing?
Yeah. Oh, there's a few favourite songs of mine. When I mentioned the venue, Eel Pie Island, I saw a young English soul singer there called Chris Farlow with his great hit song Out of Time, which was written by Mick Jagger.
I'm sorry. I'm going to keep that till the end of the interview.
You are?
Out of Time. Simons at the end of the
interview. Okay, yeah, because of the title of
the show. That's right. I'm going to see that way. I can cut you short and say, "Look, I'm sorry, we're out of time." And
yeah, well, however, look, there's plenty of others.
You do well in radio production.
I really like our version of the Bee Gees song "To Love Somebody," which comes towards the end of the list somewhere. It's a song that I heard I heard a story about the genesis of that song. It was written for Otis Redding to sing.
There's a light, certain kind of light that never shone on me.
I'm wondering, you've just explained how you get into the role of an actor, a specific actor. When you sing a song, how does your mind go into the song?
Well, it's a bit similar, really, because the song has a bit of a story to it. And I think Barry Gibb is a great songwriter, so to take this particular song as an example, I know what it's like to make a mess of a relationship.
Yep.
I know what it's like to love somebody and to get it all wrong, and for it to not come out the way it should have. And so, you know, I see that as the theme of this song. But I don't have to think specifically of events in my past.
No.
It's just a thing that, it's a human experience that I can relate to.
Because things like Tin Soldier, that's not an experience that you've gone through.
No, it's not. And that's probably why I asked Stuart Darrieta to do the lead vocal on that one. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, I loved Stevie Marriott.
So Tin Soldier is in fact...
this is Stuart, yeah. Great song, great song. Stuart does a couple of lead vocals in the show.
On the keyboard there as well?
Yeah, he is. Playing the organ and the piano. He plays one in each hand sometimes.
Really?
The top one and the
bottom
one.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's a rather raspy voice, really, isn't it?
Yeah. He's been doing Tom Waits for a long time.
With your experience, John, what advice would you give to young Australians who have such admiration for you that they want to jump onto the same bandwagon and get into singing, the arts?
Yeah, any profession in the entertainment industry is a difficult one because you have to have a pretty thick skin. You know, there are a lot of people who will try to bring you down or criticise you or. It's a place that has a huge, great big area in which you can work, but it's only one tiny little door that you can get through.
That's right.
And you got to be the one who gets through. And that's kind of like just having faith in yourself and, you know, despite any setbacks, just saying, no, I really, not only can I actually do this, but I really, really want to do this and nothing else. Don't think of it as something, oh, yeah, I'd quite like to do that. You know, you have to be passionate.
Good. We have obviously been promoting the fact that you'd be on this show for quite a little while now. And somebody has contacted the station and they've asked you a question directly. And this is from a third party. I'll just take that down in the background. The question reads as follows. You are an English-born Aussie. To prove your credentials one way or the other, do you prefer Marmite or Vegemite?
I don't really eat either. is the answer to that, I'm afraid. Never have, actually. And I don't mind either of them, so, but I'm not attached enough to either of them to make a big deal out of it.
Okay, all right then. Well, that's a very, very politically astute way of getting out of answering the question, too, I think.
I should be a politician, shouldn't I?
Yeah, well, you should be, but do you feel very much Australian, or are you...
I feel it's interesting to feel a bit of both, you know. Mm. When you're born somewhere and you grow up there and you go to school there and you culturally are conditioned in every way, really, to the age of 20, I think I remain a pretty English in a lot of the aspects of who I am.
Yeah.
But my experience of adult life has been mostly in Australia, and I consider the move that I made to absorb this country with its great egalitarian attitude and escaping a kind of class system that exists in England. I really appreciate the fact that I did that, stuck with it, because I went back to England to live after I'd been in Hare, and I found that England in the very early 70s was rather depressing, and I really missed Australia and wanted to come back. And so my children have all been born here and gone to school here, and I feel very Australian on certain days.
So when somebody asks you the same question that I've just asked you, you can say Vegemite, but
yes,
with a tinge of a lie.
Well, I can, I don't like to tailor my answers to suit anyone.
Okay. Let's get back to Luxembourg. Have you ever actually been into the studios of Radio Luxembourg?
No, never. No, I've been to that vague area of Europe, but I've never been to the Duchy of Luxembourg itself.
No,
actually,
it's a small area.
Yeah, very small. Mm. Yeah, I've been to Belgium, been to the Netherlands. Yeah.
How do you see the? Because you actually have never had a radio role, have you?
No, not as an ongoing kind of radio. When I first arrived in Australia, I found that Australia had a huge radio culture, you know, as I was saying,
yes.
Commercial radio.
Yes.
And even the commercial radio stations back in the 50s, they had plays.
Yep. Yes, that's right.
Actors reciting plays on air.
Well, that's a throwback from the UK too, isn't it?
Yes, but the BBC did it then, and of course the ABC did it here. Mm. I did it until they really phased out plays on radio. Mm. I did a few, and I love the medium of radio. I think it creates the atmosphere inside someone's head, you know.
What is its future?
I see it as pretty much ongoing. The being entertained by things on sound only has been propagated by podcasts lately and I think they just sort of like, you know, fill the same role as radio, and there's a lot of discussions and in-depth examinations of various things on podcasts, which I kind of quite like listening to.
So those of us here at Eastside Radio shouldn't pack up our bags and open a TikTok account or something?
No, stick with it, because as long as you've got listeners, it's a great thing to do. It really is, I think it's a better form of communication than most media.
Well, so long as we can attract talent such as John Waters, then, of course, we will have a great listenership, and we're grateful that you could be here with us today. Tell us about the upcoming show. Oh, no, not upcoming, because it started.
Well, we've just started this season.
Yes, that's right. You've just started.
Yeah, we're doing some gigs around Sydney. I think the one we've got in Cremorne on Feb 15 is probably the one of the nicer Sydney venues that we're doing. But we take our shows in general to regional areas.
Yep.
So we're up and down the coast of New South Wales.
So is that a bit discriminatory? We're missing out on them in the major cities?
I think it's a reflection of the lack of appropriate venues in the big cities, you know, because the size of theatre that are perfect for a show like ours, they tend to exist in country towns.
What sort of song is good for a country town? How about Ichiku Park?
Why not? It's got a certain flavour about Under Dreaming Spires.
Tell us a little bit about Stuart and this the Chartbusters.
All right,
that's a great name for it.
Yes, well, I'll let you know. Obviously, we put this band together, people that we played with a lot before. We did a big tour with the Glass Onion show with something pretty close to this lineup. And we just wanted to give them a cute name for the purpose of this show. So Stew and the Chartbusters seemed like a good one. Paul Burton is our lead guitar player, and he's a magnificent guitar player. He's one of those real gun-for-hire type players. Mm. He played with a lot of people, notably with Rene Geyer a lot. And we've got Victor Rounds on bass, initially on this album. And you'll hear Tony Mitchell, former Sherbet bass player.
Right, right.
Victor's doing this tour with us, as is Jo Elms, a great female singer, and she's a percussionist and an acoustic guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Henson, the original superstar drummer, who was John English's drummer for a long time, on the drums. So we're a six-piece. Mm. And
it's a powerful sound.
It's a great sound. There's a lot of things that are driven by the keyboards, and sometimes we've got just guitar-based songs. I don't play in this. I've always played guitar when I've done concerts, but I just thought I wanted to be the guy, the front man of a band, who roams the stage with a microphone in his hand. And I've enjoyed that in this show. It makes me feel like I'm communicating a lot more strongly with the audience because I'm, can eyeball them and I feel like I talk a little bit between songs, and I feel like I'm really getting on a personal level with them.
Right, right. Well, I should say, did you say where those tickets were available for the show?
If you go to RadioLuxembourgLive.com, you will find out the ticket link and all the list of gigs. Yeah.
And I suggest if anybody would want to go to that, then they'd best hurry up because it will be a show that sells out well and truly.
I think we're going to sell pretty well. Yeah, I've got my fingers crossed. So.
Well, how wonderful is it to have John Waters as my guest here today in the studios on Monday Drive? John, as I suggested to you earlier, we are a little bit out of time. There is probably no better way to end this discussion than to thank you for coming in than this song, and perhaps you would like to introduce it yourself.
Well, I saw this performer do this song. It became a big hit, and in Australia as well. Chris Farlow, great soul singer, with Out of Time. Job signs drift my eyes in shades of green
under dreaming spires. I just wanted to make sure.
Just testing our listeners to make sure you are paying attention. Did you all go, but that's the song we've just heard?
in fact, I won't ask you to reintroduce it, but this is what you really meant to play.
Yeah, go Chris. Well, go John being Chris.
Yeah.
You have been listening to Eastside Radio Podcast. For selections of more enjoyable content like this, visit our website, eastsidefm.org, and click on Podcast.